Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 151, recorded February 18th, 2013.
I'm going to say something different from what I usually say. I'm going to say, hey, what's up, Aquarimaxers? Are you going to say something different from what you usually say?
I don't know. I have to say that this is the episode and this is the date, so I kind of have to say the same thing every time.
I know, but you usually say, hello, but you didn't.
Okay, this time I will say, greetings.
There you go. Okay.
Is that better?
Yes.
Okay, we wouldn't want people to get bored or anything. Right.
No.
The silence. What does the silence mean?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Okay.
Okay, so we have three contributors today. We have Tom in Provo, Utah, here in the States, Juliet in Paris, France, and Mick in Carnforth, UK.
Cool.
So.
Welcome all.
Indeed. And happy late Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Because it was last week.
Right.
Right. Alrighty. We're going to go to Tom first. He says, congrats on number 150. The lighting information was exactly what I needed.
Excellent.
What I needed.
I'm glad.
Oh, and now he's talking to Russ on this next part.
Is he?
Oh. Yes, that's you.
Okay.
Yes. And he says, by the way, you said you were colorblind, because Russ is. How do you use a test kit? Russ told me about this email, and we both laughed. I'll finish reading the email.
Go ahead.
He says, I have pretty good color vision, but frequently have trouble matching test water to the colors on the API card. Ammonia and nitrite are easy because nothing registers, but values for pH and nitrates are anybody's guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is what I do. First of all, I need to clarify that I'm not entirely colorblind. I
you can see color, but it's the shades.
Yep, I have
your red green.
A fairly strong red green colorblind, and then a mild form of another sort of colorblindness. But I still see colors. I just have trouble distinguishing, mostly because I can't distinguish red as easily as most people. So purple can look blue and things like that too, as well as sometimes red green issues. So anyway. This is what I do. I bring the test kit to Kelly and I say, which one do you think this is? And when I'm at work, I just bring it to two other people and say, you know, what do you think? And then I go check it with somebody else.
Uh-huh.
And that
see, I'm worth
okay.
two.
Well, you're worth
well,
more than
two. Plus there's
two.
Not another grown-up around to ask at home.
Well, I could ask the kids. They'd probably be more accurate. I mean, none of them are colorblind, so.
That's true. But so we laughed about that email because he doesn't read them. I read them for him.
I try, but I always have to get a second opinion just in case. Because sometimes I'm fine, and it depends on the, you know, certain kits. I like the API kit. It's my favorite, but certain of the tests are easier for me to read than others because of the different colors. So there you go.
On a side note, he hates color-coded maps, like zone maps of, you know, temperatures and what grows where, or, you know, any kind of information map that uses this zone over here that has this color means this. He
this
hates
is
those.
Light purple, and this one is light
medium
blue,
purple,
and this
one is dark
purple,
purple and this one is, yeah, he hates
nuts.
Those.
I have a hard time with those.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Party. Anyway, but yeah, I'm glad you asked that question because it's kind of funny to bring it up. But I always get a second and third opinion, if available. That's how I tell.
And we're very glad that the lighting episode was helpful for you and gave you some good information.
Right.
Alrighty, let's go on to Juliet. We haven't heard from Juliet in a while.
A long time.
So I hope she's well. She says, Dear Russ and Kelly, I have been working every day, including weekends, for the past months, and therefore have not had time to write, but I listen faithfully every week to your podcast and only wish there were even more of them. Huh? I'm sorry you work so hard. You need a vacation.
True. And we're glad that we can provide podcasts you like, and we are in part fulfilling your wish by adding one more to the total right now.
There you go. I love the fact that you do these theme shows like the one about lights. I bought a nano tank and recently had to change the light, but the metal clip holding it in place was so tight that I broke it off by accident. Hoping the super glue will hold it in place enough so it doesn't drop off into the water, I'll be electrocuting my shrimp. Oh dear.
And perhaps other innocent bystanders, too.
Yeah. Cross fingers, it's one of those tanks where the hood is attached to the tank so I can't change the lid. Oh, that's not very helpful.
No, it's kind of a pain. Mm. Sometimes I've had to deal with that problem by drilling holes in the plastic of the lid and then wiring, you know, stick a wire through it mm-hmm. and twist it up on the outside.
Like a giant
twisty tie to hold it in. I've done things like that. Because that can be really frustrating and, as
dangerous.
Juliet mentions, dangerous. Yeah. So hopefully it
We don't want
works.
You to get electrocuted either.
No.
Okay, she says, update on shrimp. I have a 20-gallon with a population of red cherries, 3 Amanos, and some Endlers. I see buried females, but never any babies. This is weird. I have no idea if the Amanos or fish are getting them. I thought they could have been hiding, but when I redid the decor, I didn't find one, even hiding in the filter. The same thing was happening in my Nana, which had a population of wild green cherries. The females all seem to be ventilating their bellies, but I don't see any eggs or babies. I just don't get it. I used to have some red cherries in there that bred like crazy until the whole lot died after an ammonia spike from overfeeding while I was on vacation. Ever since then, none of my shrimp have bred. They will arrive buried from the storage and raise those young, but then that's it. So they raise the young that they're buried with?
Right.
So she gets like one generation out of it, and then that's it.
Right. That is a strange case.
She says, I was wondering if the water wasn't too hard. It's about 8.3 in Paris, so I recently began adding RO water to the Nano, and it's probably down to about 7.6 or so.
7.6 should be fine.
That should be okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I know they often need an adaptation period when they arrive, but I've had them for a year now, so that seems out. What is going on? Help!
That is very unusual.
She's got some more information. I'll just keep... Mm-hmm. Do you want me to keep reading still?
Sure.
Okay. Water temperature is 26 degrees Celsius. What is that in?
26 degrees Celsius. That's like 78 or 79 degrees right in there, okay. Fahrenheit.
And
so
that's a happy place for shrimp?
They can do okay there. I might keep them if you don't have to worry about other considerations. I would probably keep it a little cooler.
Like?
75, 74.
Okay.
76. They're adaptable. I mean, you can keep them in that warm without a problem, but they might do a little better in a lower temperature. Slightly lower.
Alrighty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she goes on to say they are fed on shrimp pellets, blanched lettuce, zucchini, and some sinking fish pellets as well.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like the diet's good, too. And I want to emphasize, I'm not saying that 78, 79, they can't do well there. Mm-hmm. In Hawaii, we kept them at about those temperatures just because that was the ambient temperature, and
right.
they did fine.
It shouldn't be a breeding problem, is what you're saying.
It shouldn't prevent them from breeding, no. But I know that they can do very well at lower temperatures. A lot of shrimp keepers will keep them at lower temperatures.
She's got a couple of questions about it here, too. We can talk about those and then maybe postulate. Mm-hmm. When females are ventilating, does that mean they have eggs, or do they just do this all the time, no matter what? It looks very transparent under their bellies. No little balls, no eyes. Do wild cherries have very light eggs? Hoping you and Mick or other shrimp people can help.
Well, I can say that having kept the wild cherry variety mm-hmm. quite a bit, fairly extensively, they do have darker eggs that you can see them. They're very visible.
Okay, so they're not...
Most the red cherry shrimp have yellowish eggs, but the wild cherries just have dark
contrasting
eggs. They're darker than most of the rest of their body most of the time. I mean, the females of wild cherries can change colors, and some of them can be almost black sometimes. But in general, if they're that sort of light, translucent, greeny, wild color, yeah, the eggs are darker than that.
Okay. So, buried, remind me,
mm-hmm.
buried means they have eggs, or they...
Yes.
Okay.
It means they are carrying eggs under their bellies with their swimmerettes.
So they're kind of, sort of laid, they're not internal anymore,
they're just carrying them on the outside. Yeah, the ovaries you can see in a red cherry shrimp, a female red cherry shrimp. It's a yellow sort of saddle thing on the back mm-hmm. as the eggs are maturing and they're about to be...
And that's saddled.
That's saddled.
Okay.
And then once they release the eggs, then they hold them until they hatch, and that state is called buried.
Okay.
So, yeah. The females will still use the swimmerettes and move them around. They'll clean them off, and they'll move them around quite a bit, even when there aren't any eggs. So
what does ventilating mean?
Well, they pulsate those swimmerettes.
Oh, that's what that means?
Yeah.
Okay.
It helps keeps the eggs oxygenated.
Oh,
you know, they need
okay,
a constant flow of oxygen that helps them.
Her question: do they just do that all the time?
But they still do it to some extent, even when they don't have eggs.
Okay.
I've seen that plenty of times.
Okay. So,
maybe they don't
actually have eggs.
Yeah, probably not. If you can't see the eggs on the female, and you can see the female fairly well.
So they're not even getting to the buried point.
Well, I think she said somewhere that she once in a while sees buried females in one of the tanks, but she doesn't see the babies.
Yeah, she says, I see buried females, but never any babies.
Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of things. I mean, a mono shrimp, I've heard from some people that a mono shrimp will eat red cherry shrimp babies.
Mm-hmm.
I've also heard from other people that they keep both in the same tank and the red cherries breed. The Amanos don't, of course, because they have a much more complex life cycle involving different salinities in the water, so you can't just breed them in a freshwater tank. But I've heard of people keeping them together and getting the red cherries to breed, and I've heard other people say, nope, the Amanos are killing off my red cherries. So.
It just depends.
It's probably some variation in the situation.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the Endlers will try to pick off some babies, but I don't know. I know that's one of the few fish.
Seems like she ought to see some at some point, though.
You'd kind of think so. I mentioned to her in an email that I sent about this that my Opaiula have gone through breeding cycles that are pretty strange. Like when we had them in Hawaii, they didn't breed once. And we had them for at least 2 years in Hawaii. Without one single batch of young, I didn't see a buried female the entire time, nothing. And then we got here, and within a month or two, two batches of young. And then for a while, they were sort of sporadic, but didn't produce that many, and then all of a sudden they started producing like crazy again.
Wasn't it you took some of them out, didn't you? Kind of reduce the population, you sold some?
Most recently, when I took some out, then, yeah, they went through a population explosion, so I got about 40 babies all at once, and then I have two more buried females with huge batches.
Does she say how many she's got? She says a population of red cherries.
Right.
I don't know, would they do the same thing? Of they figure, oh, well, we're kind of at our maximum capacity, so we just won't have any babies right now?
It's possible. I mean, I don't know that you'd have to have a lot of red cherry shrimp to get to carrying capacity, like carpeting
the
bottom of the tank.
Especially, yeah, I mean, she's got a
20-gallon. Yeah. I mean, you can have hundreds of red cherry shrimp in a 20-gallon tank and still have them reproducing. So I'm not sure what's going on.
Odd.
But Mick or anyone else with shrimp experience, if you have some more insights for us, that would be great.
Yeah, send it along.
Hopefully we can help you.
She also says, otherwise, I would love a show on water hardness. You speak of it a lot, but there are things that I just don't get. KH, GH, what is the difference? Can you have a low pH in hard water, or can you have very hard water like ours in Paris and still have the wrong minerals for shrimp and fish? Not wishing to spend tons of cash right now, I own a pH test, a KH test, and one for nitrates and or nitrites. Can't remember, and I'm not near the tank right now. That's what she said. For these non-breeding shrimp, should I be checking something vital that I am not doing?
Well, I would say one thing in terms of GH and KH. Aquariomax episode 49, we go into some detail on that, and that may help. So let us know if you have a chance to re-listen to that one. It's a couple years old, so you may not have even heard that one. But you can go back on the website to the podcast
page. Yeah, you can't get it on iTunes anymore.
You can't get it on iTunes anymore, but you can scroll back through there and get to episode 49, or just do a search for episode 49 Aquariomax. That would probably be the fastest way to do it on Google. And then once you've listened to that, that may shed some light on the GHKH business. So we talked about that. I think it was that episode fairly extensively.
Okay.
And if that helps, great. And if not, let us know, and we will try to do a dedicated show, or at least a big piece of a dedicated show to explaining that, because it does take a while.
Alrighty.
Mm-hmm. Now, what were the other things?
She said, can you have a low pH and hard water, or can you have very hard water like ours in Paris and still have the wrong minerals for shrimp and fish?
Well, I can think of at least one situation where you'd have a fairly low pH and hard water, but it's not not typically a stable situation, because you have, if you put, for example, an acid, like the pH down in your water,
mm-hmm.
it will bring the pH down. But then the buffers in your water will eventually kick in within 24 hours, or so it'll bounce back up. Mm-hmm. So that is an unstable case where you have low pH and still hard
water. So you can't have
it
and have it stay that way, is what you mean.
I'm trying to think if there's any other situation where that could exist, but that's the only one that comes to mind right now.
Okay.
And what was the other one?
Can you have very hard water like ours in Paris and still have the wrong minerals for shrimp and fish?
You can, yeah.
Hard water just means it's got lots of minerals in it, right? It doesn't necessarily specify what kind of minerals?
It's usually referring to calcium and or magnesium.
Okay.
But it can be other things too, and it often does have a lot of other minerals in there, including metals. And of course, shrimp are very sensitive to metals, so if you have hard water that also has metals in it, heavy metals specifically, you know, like lead, cadmium, and stuff like that, that can be bad for the shrimp and not allow them to reproduce very effectively. I'm not sure that's her situation, especially since she's diluting the tap water with RO.
Right.
And that she's had shrimp reproduce like crazy before.
In the same water.
It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
But anyway, the thing I was getting to with the Opaiula before, my red Hawaiian red lava shrimp, that they've gone through these cyclic reproduction, and I've gone for months where I don't get anything, and then suddenly, wham, I get tons of them. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what exactly is going on, why that is, but
it's seasonal.
There may be subtle environmental cues that the shrimp are picking up on. I don't know, because I know that there's tons of people who have red cherry shrimp and just can't stop them from breeding, just like Juliet has had that very same situation right. In the past. So, very strange.
Okay, so she also says, with regards to the person who wanted to put Zebra Daniels in with shrimp, who was that?
I think that was Tony.
Was that Tony?
About
okay.
That, huh?
She says, I tried that once, and they eat all the babies and harass the adults nonstop, even ripping off their legs and eyes. They are strong, fast, permanently hungry, and tenacious. If ever there was a fish I would not keep with shrimp, it would be a Danium. In fact, I only keep Otto's with shrimp now.
Yeah, well, that does make sense. Danios are kind of high-energy fish.
Yeah?
Yeah. So that makes sense.
Okay.
And I think that's good advice.
So she ends saying, hoping someone can help me get these shrimp to breed once and for all, and yes, there are both males and females in the tank, just in case anybody was wondering.
Yep.
That's always helpful.
It is. It makes a difference.
So if any of you lovely shrimp people out there have ideas, please send them in.
Mm-hmm. And, or maybe if you have shrimp that breed like crazy and you can get them to France. There you go.
And we should take our break.
Okay.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629, or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Icy Nelly.
Alrighty, we are going on to Mick's email.
Mick in Carnforth, UK,
yes. Who hopefully will send information that will help Juliet. he says, really enjoyed the discussion on lighting last show and thought I would let you know my experience with cheap LED lights. When I set up my micro marine tank last year, I added two white with blue clip-on LED lights, which I bought cheap from eBay. They lasted about 5 months. I tried to give them a clean, thinking it was perhaps salt residue, but no, they were just virtually burned out. The lesson is, if buying LED, get a recommended brand and save money in the long term. Now, I thought the whole point of LED is that they don't burn out.
Right. And, but I think we may have mentioned in the last show, too, is that I've had experiences similar to Mix. So, I'm not the only one. Mix had the experience.
Is there, like, fake LED technology that people
are
selling?
No, there's just shoddy LED technology.
Oh, shoddy is a great word.
Yeah, they're just, because they're cheap, you know. They cut corners and it doesn't last. So
okay.
Mick has had the same experience that I have had, and so
if you're going to get LED, it's worth it to spend money on good ones.
Right, that's a great point that you bring up, Mick, so thank you.
Yes, he says, the lesson is, if buying LED, get a recommended brand and save money in the long term.
Right, like the Marineland one that I have is doing perfectly well.
That one, how long have you had that one?
I don't know, a couple years, but
it's
nice not to have to change the bulbs.
Yeah. Okay, he says, last week I decided to close down the Paludarium. It has been a great experiment, but was getting quite a bit of water logging in the land area, and I decided to give it an overhaul anyway. I thought through what I might do and decided to make a Canton cave entrance style setup for my axolotls to go in. Great idea! I also thought that I would try adding a few blind cave tetras to the mix, as it is a reasonable size tank at 160 liters. All went well. The axes went in and looked great with their pale bodies against the dark substrate. The cave fish were exploring all around, and then disaster struck. My original 8 tetras became 5 overnight, then 4 by the next afternoon. Yes, the axolotls had started picking them off. The blighters. That was his word, not mine. I'm just reading it.
I'm not laughing because the fish were eaten.
Mm. You're just laughing at me saying that.
Yeah, it's a tragedy about the fish. The way that you said that was amusing.
Why hadn't they been picking him off before?
Because they hadn't been in the same tank.
Oh, right. That was... Never mind. Sorry. Mm. My brain was backwards for a minute. I've turned it around now. Okay. Hopefully it'll work.
So sorry to hear about that. Yeah. I had a similar experience with larval tiger salamanders, very similar to axolotls, except they are much more likely to metamorphose to the adult form. But I caught some as a kid, put about four of them in a tank, put them in with some minnows, about 30 minnows. And the next morning I had two minnows left.
And some fat axolotls. Some larval tiger salamanders,
yeah.
I'm sure they appreciated it. Yeah. They said, wow, this guy is great. Look at the buffet. Okay, so out came the axolotls back to the fish room, and now I have a great aquarium back in the living room with more cave tetras added. And now I just introduced a group of seven Corydoras thereby. Very nice.
You know, I hope we can see some photos of this tank pretty soon. It sounds really cool.
Oh, he actually says he hopes to add a video of things soon.
Yeah.
Although, but for some reason, every time I add Corys to a setup, they seem to think that they are Danios for a week or so, shooting about like little round torpedoes. Have you had any do this? It has happened to me for years. Every time I have put any Cory into a tank larger than a small breeding box.
I'm trying to remember. I honestly can't recall if that's happened or not. On the occasions, I've only kept probably four or five different species of Corys.
Mm-hmm.
Kept the Corydoras aeneas, both the bronze and the albino. I've kept Corydoras, let's see, punctatus and Corydoras hestatus. Probably a couple others, but I just can't think of... that's a good question. Next time I get a bunch of Corys, I'll test that out, because I can't recall right now. But if any listeners have had that... experience with Corys, or an opposite experience, let us know. It'd be interesting to collect some anecdotal data on that.
Maybe they're just going, woohoo, look at all this space! Yeah. We've got a new backyard!
Exactly.
This is neat! Okay, he says, I also thought you might like to see a picture of our new horned or Pac-Man frog called Greedy. That's a great name.
It is.
Only small now, about the size of a small green hungry golf ball, but I have ideas of making a micropelidarium for him sometime in the future.
And someday
best fishes
he'll be
to you all.
He'll be the size of a green hungry, a cantaloupe. when he's all flattened out.
So did he send a picture?
He did, and we'll put that on the show page. Thank you for sending that.
That's cool.
I love Pac-Man frogs.
They're very cute.
They are, in their sort of...
Couch potato-y,
lumpy sort of way. Yeah, I like them. And you know, I have to mention this too. I really love blind cave tetras. I just do.
I know.
I don't know what it is about them, but
I remember, okay, the first time I saw them, this was years ago. I don't remember if we were even married yet or not, but we went to the zoo here in Salt Lake, and they had kind of an exhibit of things that live underground or live in the dark. They had little fruit bats and what else?
Groundhogs
or something. Yeah, scorpions glowing in the dark. And so they had a little setup with the blind cavefish.
Mm-hmm.
And Russ is telling me, oh, you're going to see these. These are so cool. I had some of these when I was a kid. And I looked at them and... I totally get it. They're interesting in their bizarreness.
Yeah.
But they're pretty ugly. They're just like little pink eyeless... I don't know, it's kind of like keeping pinky mice as a pet or something.
Well, people keep hairless rats as pets.
They do, people, yes, but they have their eyes open.
Yes.
And they'll interact with
they
you.
They have eyes.
They have eyes, yeah. But I know they're cool and that they're blind. They don't have any eyes and they live in the dark and they still manage to get around and everything. But they're not very, I don't find them very attractive.
Well, I just think a setup like Mix would just be very striking. So.
Well, that would be cool with the axolotls, except if you could keep a separator or something so they didn't eat each other.
Well, I'm just thinking the tank where it looks like a cave and you have the fish swimming around in the cave and put like a lunar light on it. Mm-hmm. And so at night it could be like a night light because they don't care
and
if the light's
these
on.
Creepy, pasty pink fish swimming around in the night light.
Yeah.
Not in the kids' rooms, I tell you.
I don't know. I think it would be cool. Maybe I'll have to set one up in my office sometime.
You can do that.
Because then it won't bug you.
I don't know. You can do it if you want. I just think it's funny that you were really excited and I tried to like them.
I remember that. That was funny. But, yeah, the tank in
that
the zoo
was that
was
way
nice.
Back. That was, I was still figuring out the difference between a molly and a goldfish.
Oh, I know. Back then, you were still learning
time.
A lot of
things. I was not raised on fish.
No, but you've learned a lot since then.
Yes.
But the tank at the zoo was very cool because it probably had
it was a neat
30
setup,
or 40 fish
yeah.
in there, so it was pretty, you know, well-populated.
In a cave kind of room,
right.
So you were in the dark.
You were already in the dark, but then the tank itself was a bow front. And it was built to look like a cave, so it was really a pretty stunning display. And I'm sure yours is too, Mick, and we want to see it.
Yes.
I want to see it anyway.
Oh, I want to see it. I didn't mean, you know, it just was funny to me.
Yeah.
Alrighty, I think that's all we have today. Let's see if we have anything else for us.
Okay, not at the moment, so...
May the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.